All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first of all, I want to thank Mrs. Sklar and family for sponsoring the shiur tonight in memory of Dr. Sklar, Zichron Livracha. I think I say every year that Dr. Sklar's levaya, his funeral, was the first levaya I performed when I came to Baltimore. He actually was one of the first people that I met when I came, even before we actually moved here. So I had the opportunity to visit with him when he was in Sinai Hospital. A very, very special man, a very special wife, and a very wonderful family. We should hope that in the merits of our Talmud Torah, his neshama should have an aliyah. We begin with number one. Vatomer Rivka el Yitzchak. So Rivka Imenu says to her husband, Yitzchak, katzti bechayai. Katzti bechayai, a little bit of biblical drama. I am disgusted with my life. Mipnei benos ches, because of these girls of Ches. Now, who are the girls of Ches that she's referring to? These are the wives of Esav, right? Esav married from some of the indigenous women. Rivka is exceptionally upset because they brought idolatry into the home of Yitzchak Avinu. And essentially what she's saying is, if Yaakov is going to marry a girl just like his brother did, I don't want to live. I don't want to live. Very dramatic. Very dramatic, especially from a woman who until now has really been exceptionally silent throughout the different stories in the Torah. But nevertheless, a little bit. So number two, Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov. Yitzchak Avinu calls over his son Yaakov. Vayivarichu, so he blesses him. Vayetzareu, and he commands him. Vayomer lo, and he tells him. Lo sikach isha mibnos Kenan. So Yitzchak, here is the command. You will not take a woman from the daughters of Canaan. Rather, Komlech Padana Aram, Besa Besuel Avi Imecha. Go to Padana Aram, go to the home of Besuel, your mother's brother. Vikach Lucham Isham Isha Mibnos Lavan Achi Imecha. And take from there a wife from one of your cousins, from Lavan, the brother of your mother. V'keil shakai yivarech oscha, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should bless you. V'yafricha v'yarbecha, and he will cause you to be multiple, he will cause you to multiply, to increase in number. V'yisa likahal amim, and you will become an assembly of people. V'yitein lecha es birkas Avraham, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give you the Abrahamic blessing. Lecha ulezaracha itach lerishtecha es eretz migurecha asher nasan Elokim li Avraham. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should apply this blessing to you, to your seed, that you may inherit the land wherever you are, the land that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Avram Avinu. So a beautiful blessing that Yitzchak gives his younger son, his Yaakov, right before Yaakov Avinu embarks on this journey. This journey that in reality should have been really a matter of days, maybe a matter of weeks, actually spans over two decades. What's interesting to note, number three, the Medrash points out, Vayikar Yitzchak al Yaakov vayivarecho. So, Rabbi Avo Amar, Lefi shahayu habrachos mifukfakos biyado, veheichon is osheshu biyado, kan vayikar Yitzchak al Yaakov. So the Medrash picks up on something fascinating, which is that when you look at the blessings that Yitzchak gave his son Yaakov in number two, what's immediately striking? What's immediately striking? Or that's not so immediately striking. Right. It's not fair because you have a chumash in front of you, but these blessings sound an awful like what? An awful lot like. So good, the blessings Hashem gave to Avram. What else? The brachos that Yaakov received from Yitzchak earlier on in the parsha, especially that lashon of v'yitein lecha, right? Again, so it sounds like the Medrash is picking up on this idea that it almost sounds like that the brachos that Yaakov is now giving to his son, that Yitzchak is giving to his son Yaakov right before he embarks on this journey to Padan Aram, sound an awful lot like the blessings that Yaakov obtained from his father. How? With the whole deception, right? By dressing up like Esav. So the Medrash says something amazing. The Medrash says, because the brachos, the blessings, that Yaakov Avinu received from his father Yitzchak through the act of deception, mifukfakos biyado. What does that word mean? What does that word mean? Mifukfakos, mefakfek. Mefakfek means like wavering. In other words, that Yaakov had obtained the brachos But because he had obtained them in a strange fashion, these brachos were not solidified for him. So v'heichon nis'osheshu biyado, when do the blessings become solidified for Yaakov? He writes the Medrash, kan. It is here that they are solidified. Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, Amre Belozer, and Kiyom Aget el Bechosamav, Shalotomar, Ilube Shirim Yaakov Ba'aviv Lo Nathal Berchosav. Don't say that had Yaakov not fooled his father, he would have never gotten the blessings. Talmud Lomar, Vayikra Yitzchak el Yaakov, Vayivarich Oso. So the Medrash says there's something exceptionally profound over here. It's not just that Yitzchak is giving his son blessings before he embarks on a journey to find a wife, but what is Yitzchak doing at this very moment? What is he doing? Okay. He is affirming that which occurred before. He is legitimizing that which occurred before. Because remember, this is always the obvious question. Can you steal brachos? Can you deceptively obtain blessings? It's not some kind of hocus pocus. Brachos come from God. So what, if you dress up like someone else and someone mistakenly gives you the blessings, suddenly they're yours? Says Medrash, no. Yaakov didn't obtain the brachos, but they were mefakos biyado. On one hand, it was clearly ordained that this way was supposed to happen. On the other hand, it was still an act of deception. Says the Medrash, the blessings that Yitzchak gives his son before he sets out for Padan Aram is where he legitimizes the fact that Yaakov Avinu is the spiritual heir to the Abrahamic dynasty. And the Medrash gives a mashal. The Medrash says, Amar Rab Rachya, mashal ben Malachim, shayachoser la'aviv, lito litra achas shal zahav. This can be compared to a prince who was literally a choser, who was like snooping around, right, furtively scoping out his father's treasury because he wanted to get some gold. What happened? Amar lo, so the king says to his son, lama b'matmonios, why are you sneaking around? Ba v'tol l'cha b'farhesya, take that which is rightfully yours and do it in public. So says the Medrash, that's what's happening over here. Not a simple blessing, but this blessing that Yitzchak gives Yaakov at this moment is an affirmation to the fact that Yaakov Avinu in fact does rightfully own the brachos that were associated with the birthright. What's striking about this episode? Okay, good, good. Then what does that say for the first time? Good. We're going to have to do that in a different shear. But good, excellent question. What else? He was tricked the first time, correct? He's doing it willingly. So, correct. Well, it's pressured by Rivka to send his son away. Lav davka that he's pressured to go out and give him a blessing. I'll tell you what's striking about this is that there's never any mention of a conversation between Yitzchak and Yaakov about what happened. Right? Isn't it strange? At this point in time, you know, the cat's out of the bag. You remember, the cat was out of the bag already long ago, because immediately when Esav comes back, Yitzchak very quickly realizes what happens. Here's an opportunity to perhaps revisit this very awkward familial moment. Yaakov, you remember that time when you dressed up like your brother and you fooled me and you took the blessings? It's okay. Water under the bridge, right? Because now I'm affirming the fact that the blessings are here. But interestingly enough, although according to the Medrash, Yitzchak Avinu is affirming the fact that Yaakov is the rightful spiritual heir to these blessings, yet the Torah makes no mention of any kind of discussion about the episode of, we'll call it the episode of the deception. Yes? Why? But he did it. But he did it. At the end, you're right. And that's, remember, that's how Rivka.
And that discussion seemed continuing here, because Rivka now tells Yitzchak, you know, you gotta do something else with Yaakov now.
Right, but remember, Rivka never had that conversation with Yitzchak either. That initial, right? The initial conversation is between Rivka and Yaakov. There's never a conversation between Rivka and Yitzchak, which is a separate discussion. But my point is, even if you want to say it should be between Rivka and Yitzchak, I'm saying it's Yitzchak and Yaakov, because here Yaakov is going out of his way, according to the Medrash, to reaffirm the blessings. Just one would have thought that as a part of that reaffirmation, or a part of that affirmation, would be just some level of revisiting the events of the past. Yet, they're noticeably absent. Now, by the way, the simple answer, of course, is what? Right? Torah is not a storybook. The Torah is not a storybook. There are many pieces of stories that are missing, and the Torah only chooses to include that which is absolutely relevant. Okay, so that, if you need to leave, now's a good time, right? Because that's our first answer for tonight. But the truth is, perhaps we're going to try to understand a little bit deeper as to why Yitzchak goes so far as to reaffirm, but yet does not in any way feel the need to revisit the circumstances by which Yaakov got the blessings in the first place. So perhaps in order to really answer this question, we have to spend a little bit of time trying to understand the persona of Yitzchak Avinu. If you remember again, what we've been doing, our pattern until now, is we've been focusing on personalities. We focused on Terach, we focused on Avraham, we focused on Sarah, and this week we'll spend a little bit of time focusing on Yitzchak. So take a look at number 4. Writes the Pasuk, writes the Torah in the beginning of this week's parasha. The Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avram, Avraham holid es Yitzchak. These are the generations of Yitzchak, the son of Avram. Avraham begat. Literally, Avram reared. Avram gave birth to Yitzchak. Two problems with the Pasuk, and they are, number one, right? Why does it have to tell me that it's Yitzchak ben Avram? Right? There's only one Yitzchak in Genesis. We know exactly who we're talking about. And question number 2, is Avram holy this Yitzchak? So even if you feel the need to establish some type of familial connection by saying Yitzchak ben Avram, why the need for that second phrase, and Avraham begat Yitzchak? So there are 3 interesting approaches here, pretty much all in the same vein, the Kliyakar, the Arachaim, and the Radak. So the Kliyakar says in number 5 the following idea. The Eila told us Yitzchak ben Avram, 5 Aleph. 5 Aleph. The Eilat told us Yitzchak ben Avram, ki belashon ivri yesh chiluk bein lashon bein lilashon tolda. So writes the Kliyakar something amazing, that in Hebrew there is a distinction between a son, and a tolda. A tolda, of course, means what? Right, a generation or offspring. So what's the difference? Listen to this. Ki lashon ben yomar lepamim af below tolda, because sometimes someone could be called a son, even if there's no what? Now, essentially what the Kliyakar is really getting at is, tolda is a biological statement. Tolda means you brought someone biologically into this world. So writes the Kliyakar, someone can be called your child, but not necessarily biologically be yours. Why? He gives a perfect example. Ki atalmidim kiruyim banim afa pishlo yolda mamish. The perfect example of that are one's students. If you teach Torah to someone, they are called your children, even though, of course, you did not actually beget them. Is that the right word? Beget. You didn't birth them. Ukimo. And listen, he gives some interesting examples. Ukimo, vayehi lo leben demosha. A wonderful example of this. Bas Paro, the Torah says that when Bas Paro takes little baby Moshe into her home, says, vayehi lo leben. He became her son. Why did he become her son? Because she was rearing him, because she was bringing him up. Vatehi lo lebas to Esther. Right, the Torah says that Esther was an omena, she was an orphan. Mordechai took her in vatehi lo lebas. Was he her father? He was not her father. But he raised her as a child. V'Avraham nikra av hamon goyim. Af apish lo yodam. Avraham Avinu is called the father of a multitude of nations, even though he obviously did not birth them. V'chein yesh hevdel. So that's our first distinction, that a ben represents a relationship of nurturing. Someone can be called your child if in some way you nurture them, be it physically or spiritually. Tolda, however, is a word that is reserved for biological relationships. He says, V'chein yesh hevdel bein hamalamdo bein hamolido mamish. And there also is a distinction between someone who, let's say, teaches you, nourishes you spiritually, versus someone who actually gives you physical life. Why? Listen to this. This is fascinating. Ki masha ha'adam mekabel teva melamdo. Because the fact that, what happens, when you learn under someone, let's say for an extended period of time, what ends up happening? that person influences you, right? This is why the Mishnah Avos says, "Asei lecha rav," make for yourself a teacher. So it doesn't just mean, you know, make for yourself a teacher once a month. It means learn by someone, establish your place by someone who you're going to learn from, because then you will grow from them. They will influence you. But here's the difference: that influence, zehu b'mikra v'lo be'etzem. What does that mean? Zehu b'mikra v'lo be'etzem. What does that mean? That influence is what? That influence, I guess the way what Kliyaka is really driving at, is nature versus nurture. When you go ahead and there's someone in your life who influences you, that's nurture. That's nurture. You're getting something from someone else. V'lo be'etzem. But just because you are nurtured in a certain way does not necessarily mean what? You guys with me tonight? Good. All right. That doesn't, just because you're nurtured a certain way does not necessarily mean that nurture becomes nature. Okay. V'lo be'etzem. V'hamikra mishtana mitzav v'mekabel. So therefore, for argument's sake, if you were to go ahead and accept for yourself a different teacher, and your nurture were to change, you could lose your first nurture, adopt a second nurture, because all of that nurturing does not necessarily become your nature. But that which you receive from your nature, that what? That remains with you. That does not usually change. Now obviously, you can change your nature also. But changing your nature is a Herculean task. Changing who you are can be done, but it's incredibly difficult. But changing your nurture, says the Kli, at least the Kli Yakar feels, that's pretty easy. So let's skip a little bit. Look at letter Beis. Lefichach, five Beis. Lefichach, Yishmael, lo nikra ki'im ben Avraham. Therefore, in last week's parasha, Yishmael is identified how? Ben Avraham. Ben Avraham means what? Remember now we have, let's go back. According to the Kli Yakar, there are two different models. Ben means, right? Nurture. Right? Ben means that you've been influenced by this individual. Tolda means? Nature. So therefore, says the Kli Yakar, when the Torah talks to us about Yishmael, the Torah identifies Yishmael, Kim ben Avraham. Kilo kibel tivo, zulas ma shelimdo Avraham, ima sabatovim, vize hayo etzlo, bimikra vinishtane. Yishmael did not assimilate the nature of his father. He had the nurturing of his father. He grew up, in at least for part of his life, in a good home. He learned from his father's actions, but he did not take upon, he did not ingest the nature of his father. Shahari l'sof, yatzel et harbosra, lefichach tola hatolda behagar, ki kibel teva hagar hamitzris. Okay, so that's Yishmael. Look at letter Gimel. Ava Yitzchak, Kibel Teva Avraham Vilamad Gam Mimasov. But Yitzchak, what did Yitzchak get from his father? He got two things. Number one, right? Number one, he got the nature of his father. Number two, he received the nurturing of his father. Al Kain Talahakol Bi Avraham Hein Lashon Bein Hein Lashon Tolda. So this is an amazing Kli Yakar. So the Kli Yakar writes, therefore, what is the pasuk teaching us? The Eila Toldos Yitzchak. Do you want to know who Yitzchak was? Number one, who was he? Ben Avraham. Ben Avraham means what according to the Kli Yakar? The nurture. He learned from the ways of his father. He was influenced by the behaviors of his father. But not only that, Avraham holy as Yitzchak. It's not just Abrahamic nurture that Yitzchak had, but what else did Yitzchak have? Abrahamic nature. He was a Tolada. He was literally the biological offspring. He had the nature of Avram Avinu as well. Look at number six, right? The Arachai. Od. No, but remember, this is according to the Kli Yakar, because by Yishmael it says that he was the Ben Avram. which means that he did receive the nurture. He did receive it for as long as he was in the home, right? He didn't have the nature. The reason why the Kliyakar backs in that he didn't have the nature is because we see what he becomes afterwards. The fact that he becomes this para Adam, this wild man, this beast of an individual, indicates that although he had the nurture of Avram, he did not have the nature of Avram. Well, he says that nature, he says, no, nature is a function of being biologically related to someone. But just because you are biologically related to someone does not necessarily mean that you get their nature. You have to be biologically related to get the nature, but just because you are biologically related doesn't automatically mean that you get it. Correct. 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 Yes. Yeah, Yishmael is a perfect example. Yishmael doesn't have the nature, but he still gets the nurture. The difference, writes the Arachayim, is you could lose nurture very quickly because nurture is a function of your surroundings. You change your surroundings, you change your nurture. Nature, on the other hand, stays with you no matter what's going on in your life. So you could have the nurture without the nature. I hope I'm not confusing everybody with these terms, but that's Yishmael. Yes. 100%. 100%. That definitely plays into it. Valid. Take a look at number 6. Right the Arachayim. And you'll see there's a thing that's going to be developed here. Od yirmos al ikr toldosam ha tzadikim she mitzosu ma'asim tovim ki lihios she yitzchak lo. So first of all, the Arachayim echoes something, a sentiment that we found earlier in Bereshis. If you remember again, we actually had another parasha that opened with the word toldos, and it was Eile Toldos Noach. Now the difference over there is the Torah says Eile Toldos Noach, and then it goes on to say Noach was an Ish Tzadik Tamim Hayabadorosaf. He was righteous, he was complete. So there Rashi says that why does it say these are the generations of Noach if it doesn't talk about his kids, it's talking about his attributes? So there Rashi HaKadosh makes the famous statement and he says that Iker Toldoseim Shal Tzadikim Imasim Tovim. That the real offspring of the righteous are not their biological offspring, but it's their good deeds. So the Arachayim echoes that same sentiment over here. He says something fascinating. Kilios She Yitzchak Lo Nodu Nisyonosav V'geder Tzidkosom. So the Arachayim says something astounding. He says, in reality, we have one major problem when it comes to Yitzchak, and it is, we don't really know much about him. Now again, the Arachayim says, we don't know about his tests, we don't know about his difficulties in life, V'geder Tzidkosom. And the truth is, we don't really know about the boundaries of his righteousness. So look at the Arachayim, this is astounding. V'hagam shepashat savaro agabe hamizbeach. And even though we know that Yitzchak literally stretched out his neck on the altar, a reference to Akedas Yitzchak, he was willing to offer himself up as an offering. Ein davar ze mevuar. The truth is, remember, the Akedah, in the Torah's account of the Akedah, who is the focus? Avram Avinu. Right? Yitzchak, we know he's there. We know he's there. We know he's the offering. But he is not the major personality. He's not the major player in the Akedah. Listen to this. The Ad Hayom, we actually spoke about this 3 years ago. I won't test you. The Ad Hayom, and says the Arachayim, to this very day, Yesh Meforshim, and he quotes the Ibn Ezra, Ki Bal Karcho Nekad. There is a school of thought that says that Yitzchak was bound against his will on the altar. That Yitzchak did not go to the Akedah willingly, that his father concealed all the information about the Akedah until the very last moment, and then literally when it was mamish go time, carbon time, he overpowered his son, and he tied him up against his will. So the Arachayim therefore writes, we really don't know anything about this second patriarch. We really don't know about him. Therefore, look at this. Leze modia hakasov. So therefore, the pasuk is coming to teach us. Ba'amro ve'ele toldos Yitzchak ben Avram, habeit ure'ei hamolid v'hamoram ki yotze bo. Therefore, writes the Arachayim something amazing. You know what the opening pasuk of this week's parasha is coming to teach us? It's giving us Yitzchak's credentials. And here is the overlap between the Kliyakar and the Arachayim. The Kliyakar and the Arachayim are both bothered by the same fundamental question, which is, we really don't know who Yitzchak is. We really don't know, because the truth is, the one major pivotal event, which was the Akedah, the spotlight is on Avram Avinu. We simply don't know about this Yitzhak. We know that he's the son of Avram and Sarah. We know that he's the father of Yaakov. Right, we know that he's the father of Yaakov and Esav. We know that he takes his place among the patriarchs. We know that he was clearly a righteous individual. But why is he righteous? What did he do? Who is he? We have no idea. So writes the Kli Yakar and the Aruch Chaim that what the Torah is trying to do for us is, although we lack information about Yitzchak's life, the Torah is giving us his credentials in this one simple and short verse. How do we know that Yitzchak was righteous? Ela todos Yitzchak ben Avram, Avram holid es Yitzchak. So we establish Yitzchak's credentials how? By linking him to his righteous father. By linking him to Avram, what the Torah is telling us is that just as Avram was righteous, Yitzchak was righteous as well. So again, the Kli Yakar does it a little bit more in a fancy fashion by telling us that the Torah uses the word ben as well as tolda to tell us that Yitzchak took on the nature and the nurture of his father. The Aruch Chaim is not as complex. The Aruch Chaim just says the fact that the Torah goes out of its way to once again link the son with the father in light of all the missing information of Yitzchak's life, that's his credentials. Here's his resume right here. You want to know how Yitzchak, we know that Yitzchak was righteous? Yitzchak ben Avram, Avraham holid es Yitzchak. Now take a look at number 7, the Radak says, V'yesh lefarish od, again, same general idea, Shahaya yashar v'ne'eman, v'halach b'derech tova, v'oiv l'brios, kimo aviv. So writes the Radak, you know what the pasuk is coming to teach us? That Yitzchak was straight, he was honest, walked in a good path, loved and was loved by people just like his father. Ad shakol omrim Avraham holdit es Yitzchak. So the Radak almost understands that phrase, Avraham holdit es Yitzchak, to mean that that's what people would say. People would say that literally, you know, Yitzchak is like a carbon copy. He's like a total spitting image of his father. Just like the father was righteous, so too Yitzchak was righteous. So give me a couple of minutes and we'll come back to the questions. So now, this highlights for us a major, major problem, which is probably the biggest gaping hole in Sefer Bereishis. Who is Yitzchak? Who is Yitzchak? It's very nice to tell us that he's just like his father. It's very nice to tell us that he has the nature and the nurture of his father. But the truth is, just looking at it textually, although there certainly are similarities, but the truth is, you would sooner compare Yaakov to Avraham than you would Yitzchak to Avraham. So now we have to spend a little bit of time trying to actually figure out who is Yitzchak. Before we do that, let's just compound the question a little bit. Take a look at number 8. Rashi comments at the beginning of this week's parasha, Avraham holdit es Yitzchak. Rashi quotes the famous Medrash. He writes, if you look at the end of the first line, Lefi shahayu leitzani hador omrim me avi avimelech nis avra sara. So the Rashi quotes the Medrash here, who says that when Sarah Imenu gave birth, people, Leitzani Hadar, you know, Aletz is, scoffers, right? That people were spreading some pretty nasty rumors saying that the child was not Avram's, the child was Avimelech's. Now, the truth is, in all fairness, remember, Sarai Imenu becomes pregnant almost immediately after she is seized by Avimelech. Avimelech and his household are all stricken with the plague, and everybody knows about it, and Avimelech couldn't even lay a hand on Sarai Imenu. All right, the truth is, people often rush to judgment. So here, Sarah is alone for a night with Avimelech in his palace, and here, all these years, she's never gotten pregnant. Suddenly, she's pregnant. So people were saying that the child is not Avram's, the child is Avimelech's. For many years, Sarah was married to Avram. She didn't become pregnant. What did God do? Tsar klester panav shal Yitzchak dom el Avram. HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed an amazing miracle and what? Literally made Yitzchak in the exact image of Avram Avinu. So there was no, they looked exactly alike. There was no shaila. There was no question that they were related. Ve'he'idu hakol Avraham holid es Yitzchak. So according to the Medrash, that second phrase is what? It's a statement. Ele todos Yitzchak ben Avram. Yitzchak is the son of Avram. And in case anyone ever thought that that was not the case, people were saying, what? Avraham holid es Yitzchak. It's not even a question that he gave birth to him. It's not even a question that he's the father. Because look, they look exactly alike. He goes on, Ve'idu akol Avram holid es Yitzchak. Ve'zeu shekasav kan Yitzchak ben Avram. Okay. Writes the Gemara in number 9, something amazing. He actually quoted this Gemara on Shabbos a little bit. So the Gemara writes the following. Ad Avram lo haya zikna. The Gemara writes that until Avram Avinu, no one got old. No one got old. Now, what that means is, we know, of course, people are dying. So I quoted this on Shabbos, I apologize for the repetition, but the Marashah brings down, he explains, that until the times of Avram Avinu, there were no outward displays of aging. Aging, that people pretty much grew into adulthood, and they pretty much looked the same until they died. So the Gemara says, Man dahava boy l'mishtoi b'hadi Avram, mishtoi b'hadi Yitzchak. But there was a problem. When someone was trying to find Avraham, what would end up happening? They would accidentally start speaking to Yitzchak. Why? Because as we just said before, they looked exactly alike. Bahadi Yitzchak, somebody wanted Yitzchak. Mishtoi Bahadi Avram. They would go ahead and they would start up a conversation with Avram Avinu. Asa Avram boy rachami Bahavi Zikna. Avram Avinu davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, asks for old age. Shene Emar v'Avraham Zakein ba bayamin. If you take a look at number 10, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, in his essays, in a wonderful, wonderful book called Covenant and Conversation, has an incredible insight into this. And he says the following. The close physical resemblance between Avram and Yitzchak refuted the charge of those who said that Avram was not the real father. But it gave rise to an unexpected difficulty. Both father and son, identical in appearance, suffered a loss of individuality. Nor is this pure speculation. It is pointing to a subtle but important aspect of the story. Examine Genesis carefully, and we see that Isaac is the least individuated of the patriarchs. His life reads like a replay of his father's. Like Abraham, he is forced by famine to go to the land of the Plishtim. He too encounters Avimelech. He too feels impelled to say that his wife is his sister. He redigs the wells his father dug. Isaac seems to do little that is distinctly his own. Sensitive to this, the rabbis told a profound psychological story. Parents are not their children. Children are not replicas of their parents. We are each unique and have a unique purpose. That is why Avraham prayed to God that there be some clear, recognizable difference between father and son. An incredibly insightful idea. That when Avram davens for Zikna, when he davens for old age, it's much more than Avram feels inconvenienced that Yitzchak's friends, you know, keep on bothering him and asking him, to socialize. There's something much deeper over here. Avram realizes that he and his son are the same. And that's not healthy. I'm Avram, and you're Yitzchak. So interestingly enough, what begins as father and son being spitting image of each other, Avram Avinu realizes, is in fact unhealthy. Avram says, I blazed my trail. Yitzchak, you must now blaze your own. And therefore we come full circle back. What is Yitzchak's role? So you see how we come like a full 180. Yitzchak, it says the Medrash, is purposely, a miracle occurs, he purposely looks like his father in order to dispel any notions of illegitimacy. But that becomes Yitzchak's very undoing. Because now Avram Avinu has to daven for old age in order that his son, externally, physically, become distinguished from him. Which then leads us back to our fundamental question, which is, what is the role of Yitzchak Avinu? Remember, Arachaim and Kliyakar have already told us, the Torah feels content to establish Yitzchak's credentials. How? How? By linking him to his father. So that's it. Father's righteous, son is righteous, writes Rabbi Sacks. There's gotta be more. Avram realizes there has to be more. Yitzchak, you can't just be holy because you're like me. You have to blaze your own trail. You have to cultivate your own identity, your own spiritual role. What is the role of Yitzchak? Take a look at number 11. So let's examine one of the interesting episodes in this parasha. And again, through this, we're going to try to understand who and what is Yitzchak. So Rabbi Sacks just alluded to this before. Avimelech says to Yitzchak, remember, Yitzchak has relocated to the city of Gerar, which is a Philistine city, because of famine. As we just mentioned before, he pretends that Rivka is his sister. Avimelech quickly comes to understand that she's not his sister, she's his wife. But Avimelech allows Yitzchak to remain in the land. But what happens? Yitzchak becomes incredibly successful, right? Remember the Torah says that what happened? He planted his wheat, and what occurred? It blossomed forth Mea Sharim. Mea Sharim. Right? That Yitzchak Avinu planted in a time of regional famine, and he had just an unprecedented bounty. So it's interesting. People could sometimes tolerate Jews when we're not successful. But the moment that we become successful, that's the moment that society feels that we are robbing greater society of its resources. So look at number 11. Vayomer Avimelech al Yitzchak, lech me'imanu. And here's what's amazing. Avimelech just says it like it is. Go. You have to leave now. Why? Ki atzamtu mimenu ma'od. Why do you have to leave? Because you're more successful than we are. What does that mean? It means exactly what it means. Avimelech says, you're too rich, you're too powerful, you have more money than the rest of us, you have to go now. Vayelech misham Yitzchak. Remember, Yitzchak is in no position to protest, he's in no position to fight. So, Vayelech misham Yitzchak, Vayichan benachal grar, Vayeshev sham. So he got fine, he resettles. Vayoshev Yitzchak, Vayach pars be'eros, I'm sure chafru b'me Avram, aviv. So what happens? Yitzchak begins to dig wells, but not any wells. He begins to redig the wells that his father Avram had dug during the times of, right, Vayisat mum plishtim. Now, subsequently, after Avram Avinu dug the wells, the plishtim filled in the wells. Achrei Mos Avraham, Vayikro lohem shemos, kashemos asher kara lohen aviv. And Yitzchak not only digs the same exact wells, but what does he do? He calls them by the same exact names that his father had called them. Writes Rabbi Sachs in number 12, Isaac, like we just said before, is the least original of the three patriarchs. His life lacks the drama of Avram or the struggles of Jacob. We see in this passage that Isaac himself did not strive to be original. The text is usually emphatic on the point, Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Avraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Avraham died, and he gave them the same names his father had given them. So the Torah is going out of its way to tell us that not only is Yitzchak re-digging the same exact wells, because the truth is that you can make the argument that there's logic to that. What's the logic of that? First of all, they belong to him already. Number two, if there was a well there, that shows you that's what? That there's water. Alright, so it's not such great chokmah to go ahead and re-dig where someone once found water. But the fact that he goes out of his way to rename them the same names, Rabbi Sachs makes a very profound but nuanced point. Yitzchak is striving not to be original. Yitzchak does not need to be original. Yitzchak is digging the same wells and calling the same names because, again, he did not strive to be original. Look at number 13. So what happens? Interestingly enough, however, Yitzchak then does go on to dig additional wells, and they strike water. So what happens when Yitzchak digs a real well that now produces water? The shepherds of Grar get into a fight with his shepherds, and they claim ownership over the well. So they named the first well Esek, because again, Esek is like a lashon machlokis, contention, fighting. So they named the well, this is the well of machlokis, the well of fighting. They dug another well, and they also argued about this well. Vayikra shma sitna, and they named this well sitna, which also comes from a root meaning contention. Vayatek misham, vayachbor be'er acheres. So Yitzchak Avinu now, remember, he's already uncovered all of the wells that his father had dug, and he renamed them the same names that his father had given them. But apparently he needs more wells. So well number one, there's Machlokis, they call it Esek. Well number two, there's Machlokis, they call it Sitna. And he continues to dig. And amazingly enough, this third well, there's no Machlokis, there's no dispute. Vayikra Shma Rechovos. And they called the name of this well Rechovos. Vayomer ki ata hirchiv Hashem lanu ufarinu ba'aretz. Because Yitzchak Avinu says, for now the Lord has made room for us, and we will be fruitful in the land. Which of course strikes us as strange. Why? Because it seems a little bit overly dramatic for one well. Right? This notion that Yitzchak is, now everything is falling into place. Everything is hunky-dory. Why? Because we dug a well and no one's giving us a problem about it. So what's unfolding with the wells? Take a look at number 14. Right, Rabbeinu Bachya, then we're going to tie all of this together. The Rabbi Nebachi writes, he says, V'chol aver shechaku, yogiz ha-kosuf, ki mitoch ha-kino, sheneskanu bo plishtim, sosmu kol ha-be'eros, asher chafru b'mei Avram Aviv, kidei shlo yuchal yitzach lahoil atzmo bahen, ulahashkos ziri osav u'mikneu. So first of all, the Rabbi Nebachi points out over here, this perhaps is the first episode of real unadulterated anti-Semitism. Why? Because what did the shepherds of Gerar do after Avram Avinu died? What did they do to his wells? They filled it in. Now, does that make any sense? What should they have done? Commandeer the wells. Take them for yourself. But Elamai, sometimes when you hate someone enough, you would rather deprive them of something. It's a greater shtach, right? It's a greater stab in the heart to go ahead and take something away from them and render it unusable than to use for them. Because if you use it, then what? It's still in existence. You validate the endeavor, right? It's still there. It's still useful. You did something good. But if you fill it in with dirt, what you try to essentially do is to make it as if no productive activity ever occurred here. So we're not going to commandeer the wells. We're going to fill in the wells. So he goes on. As she goes, va'acharkach, third line in number 14. Va'acharkach nisgaber Yitzchak v'chafar osan. Now, I underline this word. The acharkach nisgaber Yitzchak. What does nisgaber mean? Strength. Now, why is this intriguing? Because if you take a look at number 15 and 16, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak Berditchev, in both cases, quoting from the Zohar, quotes the famous idea, v'hine yadua sh'Avraham romeis al midas ahava v'Yitzchak al midas ha'givura V'Yakov al midas ha-tiferes. So the Zohar writes that each of the three patriarchs represented some different characteristics, some different ideal. Avram was ahava, was love, or also referred to, for example, in number 16, as chesed, right, kindness. Yaakov is tiferes. Tiferes is a more complicated midah. Literally means splendor. We'll discuss what that means when we get to Yaakov. And Yitzchak is gevura. What does gevura mean? Strength. Now, it's so fascinating that Gevura's strength is the Midah that is associated with Yitzchak. Yitzchak, who initially comes across as the most passive patriarch. If, first of all, anyone was going to be Gevura, I would say Avram is Gevura. Avram swims against the tide. Avram Avinu literally was physically as well as emotionally and spiritually strong. What's the Gevura of Yitzchak? So now the Rabbeinu Bachya, I don't even know if the Rabbeinu Bachya even realized what he has done for us. The Rabbeinu Bachya has opened up a whole new world of understanding of Yitzchak Avinu simply because he chose to use one word. Back to number 14. V'acharkach nisgaber Yitzchak v'chafar osan. Afterwards. Now afterwards what? After what? After the wells were filled in. What does Yitzchak Avinu do? He continues to dig. He undigs? Unearths, thank you. He unearths the wells. The Chafer Osan, the Karlan Kashem Osashar Karlan Aviv. See, even though now the Roe Grar filled in the wells, Yitzchak goes back, unearths the wells, makes them vibrant, vital again, and renames them the same exact name that his father gave them. The Asakain, the Kavod Aviv. And why did he do this? He didn't need the water, because he could get water somewhere else. He did this out of deference for his father. Umimasha Torah hodia ze nira shenechshav lo lizchus v'yesh bazeh his orus. Writes Rabbi Nebachya, the fact that the Torah chooses to include this episode indicates that what? That A, it's important. B, that this is an accomplishment of Yitzchak. And C, that we are to learn something from this episode. The Kavachomer, what do we learn? The Kavachomer, Sha'al Yishana Adam Miderech Avosav. What's part of the take-home message? That we must perpetuate the legacy of those who came before us. That we must be bearers of the Masorah, bearers of our tradition. Shahara Yitzchak, Afilu Shemos Habeiro Shekara Osan Aviv, Lo Ratza Lishanosan. Because Yitzchak wasn't satisfied with simply unearthing the wells. What did he want to do? He wanted to reinstate the identity that his father gave them. V'zekah v'chomer l'darchei ha'avos u'minagoseihem u'musar shalahem. And if Yitzchak Avinu was so careful about maintaining the location and identity of the wells, all the more so what? When it comes to the spiritual legacy of our forefathers, how careful we must be to preserve it. V'ulai mipnei zeh, here Rabbi Bachem makes such an interesting insight, or interesting statement. V'ulai mipnei zeh, lo nishtaneh shemo, kimo shar ha'avos, v'zo mida keneged mida. And perhaps it is for this very reason, that since Yitzchak was the perpetuator of the past, that his name was never changed as well. Because Yitzchak becomes the patriarch of continuity. And therefore symbolic of the continuity is the fact that his name is never changed. We spoke about the fact that his name was probably never changed because God himself gave him that name. But we'll leave that on the side. But why is this Rabbeinu Bachya important? Because I'll tell you, just on a personal level, I always struggled with trying to understand what is the Gevura, what is the strength of Yitzchak, right? Where do you see strength in Yitzchak's personality? But now according to this Rabbeinu Bachya, it becomes crystal clear. Gevura, strength, in this particular context means the ability to remain committed and true to your mission despite multiple disappointments and setbacks. That's Gevura, the inner strength, one more time, to be true to your life mission despite multiple setbacks, despite failures, despite disappointments. That is Yitzchak Avinu. And writes the Rabbeinu Bachya, all that entire identity emerges from this one episode of the wells. His father dug them, they were filled in. He goes back. No, because the wells are much more than wells. What are they? What do they represent? What? First of all, they represent life. On a concrete real estate level, what do they represent? Ownership. So Yitzchak Avinu got, somebody's contesting the Abrahamic claim to the land of Israel. What does Yitzchak Avinu do? He goes ahead, he unearths the wells, and he goes ahead and he gives them the same exact names that he had before. Then what happens? He digs more wells. And what happens with well number one? They argue. Well number two? They argue. But what's the amazing part? He doesn't stop digging. He doesn't stop digging. And if you don't stop digging, what will ultimately happen? You'll find your rechovos. You'll find your place. You'll find your area of accomplishment. You will find some level of success. This is the Gevura of Yitzchak. This is the strength of Yitzchak Avinu. The ability to remain focused and committed to your mission, despite the fact that you will experience multiple failures, setbacks, and disappointments. Take a look at number 17. So Rabbi Sachs says this very beautifully as well. He says, letter A, normally we strive to individuate ourselves by differentiating ourselves from our parents. We do things differently, or even if we don't, we give them different names, right? This is part of growing up. We have to, right? Every child, you know, life, of course, is cyclical, right? There is that point in time where we feel that our mission in life is to be anything but our parents. And then when we get a little bit older, we realize that the ultimate mission in life is to try to emulate our parents as much as possible. But he points out, he says like this, he says, Isaac was not like this. He was content to be a link in the chain of generations, faithful to what his father had started. Remember what Rabbi Sachs said before, because his wording is very important. Isaac himself did not strive to be original. Could Yitzchak have been a trailblazer like his father Avram or like his son Yaakov? Sure he could have. He chose not to, because he realized the importance of Gevura. He realized the importance of seeing through. It doesn't have to be my way. It doesn't have to be a new way. My father started something, and I want to use all of my inner strength to see my father's work through to fruition. He goes on, letter B. Isaac represents the faith of persistence, the courage of continuity. He was the first Jewish child, and he represents the single greatest challenge of being a Jewish child. To continue the journey our ancestors began, rather than drifting from it, thereby bringing the journey to an end before it has reached its destination. And Isaac, because of that faith, was able to achieve the most elusive of goals, namely peace, because he never gave up. When one effort failed, he began again. So it is with all great achievement, one part originality, nine parts persistence. Letter C. I find it moving that Isaac, who underwent so many trials, from the binding when he was young to the rivalry between his sons when he was old and blind, carries a name that means he will laugh. Perhaps the name given to him by God himself before Isaac was born means what the psalm means when it says, we actually quoted this in our Yitzchak Shir, Hazorim bedima berina yiktziru. Those who sow in tears will reap with joy. Faith means the courage to persist through all the setbacks, all the grief, never giving up, never accepting defeat. For at the end, despite the opposition, the envy and the hate, lie the broad spaces, rechovot, and the laughter, Isaac, the serenity of the destination after the storms along the way. A profound insight that what comes out is what initially appears as the most passive of the patriarchs, perhaps is one of the strongest. A different kind of strength, not a trailblazing strength, not a strength that comes out because I'm going to do things differently than anyone before me has ever done it, but rather Yitzchak's strength comes out in his gevura, comes out in his staying power, comes out in his ability to cling to a vision, and despite the fact that that vision suffers multiple setbacks, both physical setbacks as well as emotional and spiritual setbacks, he never throws in the towel. You see, here's the difference. Without a Yitzchak, there's no future. Without those who have gevura, without those who have strength, without those who have staying power, there is no future for the Jewish people. I always say there's an amazing idea. If you, those of you who either come from families who were recently transplanted from Europe, and I say recently, I mean like the last 60 years post-war, or you know people from that generation, you will notice that they're cut from a different fabric. Their emuna, their belief is different. I remember, I think I've told this story in the past, when I was a child growing up, we used to spend summers by my grandparents. They had a large farm. They weren't farmers then, but they had a large farm. And we used to learn every morning with my grandfather, Zichron Levracha. And I remember when we asked him a question on Mishnayos, his answer would always be the same. The answer would always be, Shteit Netaira. Right? That's what it says. That's what it says. And as a child, it was exceptionally frustrating. Because what do you mean, that's what it says? That what's the answer? And it's only as I'm still growing up, but as I began to grow up, I realized that's emunah, that's gevura, that's staying power. Staying power is the, and that's, I believe, that's the only reason why we escaped, why we were able to come through a churban like the Holocaust and rebuild, because there was a generation of people that were blessed with Yitzchak-like gevura. It's not as ooh-ah as Avram. It's not as exciting, because Avram is exciting. He's conquering new frontiers. He's doing new things. He's reaching out to humanity. It's not like Yitzchak, Yaakov, who's establishing 12 sons. So again, it doesn't catch your eye as much. But it's the behind-the-scenes strength that is the very glue of our people. The gevura of Yitzchak, Yitzchak chooses not to be original, because he realizes that we have to cement the Abrahamic dynasty. We have to create, within the spiritual DNA of the people, staying power. The ability to remain committed to a vision. Because remember, not everybody's a trailblazer. Not everybody's an Avram. Not everybody's a Yitzchak. A Yaakov. But we each have to be a Yitzchak. We each have to have that Yitzchak-like gevura. Why? Because by definition, there are times in life when our faith and our resolve is tested. Some of us multiple times, some of us one time, some of us in a more nuanced fashion, some of us in a very severe and blatant fashion. But if you don't have Yitzchak staying power, then there is no future. That's the gevura of Yitzchak. Again, one more time, the ability to remain committed to a vision despite suffering multiple setbacks, failures, and disappointments. Now let's come full circle. Remember the question we started with an hour ago, which was what? She was away, right? Why is it? Remember how this all got started. How we got into this mess, right? How did we get into this mess? Remember that was the parsha start, or our shir started with the fact that Yitzchak is sending Yaakov away to Paddan Aram to get a wife, and he affirms the blessings. He affirms the blessings that Yaakov originally obtained through deceitful means. And our question was, if you're already affirming the blessing, why not take the time to clear the air a little bit? In terms of Yaakov, it's okay. Yaakov, I know what you did, but I still love you. I understand you have to listen to your mother. Whatever you're going to say, but why, if you're already affirming the blessings, why not address some of the baggage that absolutely everybody is carrying around? By the way, there's no family with more baggage than the Avos. It's incredible because why? For one simple reason. They usually didn't talk about things. They usually did not talk these things out. I don't mean to be their psychologist, right? But there's a lot, and that's part of the Musar of Sefer Bereishis, that if you carry around your baggage, that baggage gets passed down through multiple generations. But in any event, back to our regularly scheduled program. Right? So why doesn't Yitzchak bring it up? So perhaps you could suggest the following. Yitzchak doesn't bring it up because the whole Yisod of Gevura means what? That you're committed to a vision to the point that even if the vision does not materialize the way that you wanted it to, the way that you hoped it would, the way that you planned it, as long as it's moving forward, you are content with that. Because your job is not self-aggrandizement. Your job is not the furthering of the self. Your job is the furthering of, in this case, the Abrahamic vision. So yes, Yitzchak had a plan. And what was his plan? He had a firstborn son who was Esav. That son was going to receive the blessings, and that son was going to be the Abrahamic heir. Well, guess what? It didn't work out that way. And Yitzchak Avinu has enough belief to know that the reason it didn't work out that way must mean because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has other plans. Part of being a gibor is accepting the fact that life doesn't follow a script. That even if you think it should go a certain way, very often it does not. And you accept that reality as long as what? As long as you see the vision being furthered. The ultimate display of Yitzchak Avinu's gevura is that he did not need to go back and visit that episode. Because it worked out. Whatever the reason, I wanted it, I didn't want it, it worked out. That was the way it was supposed to happen, and things are progressing the way they are supposed to. To go back and to revisit it then becomes an exercise in kind of dealing with my own personal issues. And that's not what Yitzchak is about. Yitzchak is all about furthering the vision. And if the vision is being furthered, which he clearly feels it is in this particular situation, that's enough for Yitzchak. No need to go back and talk about the specifics of how everything unfolded. So we emerge with something absolutely amazing. And I don't know about you, but I know I have to thank you because of all of you, I got to prepare this year and I got to understand Yitzchak in a radically different way. What comes out is the Av, the patriarch we often assume. It almost seems, excuse me for saying, almost seems like docile in the Torah. Like we have like a parsha and a half that speaks about him, and then we don't know anything about him. And the Kliyok and the Arachaim say, you're right, we know that he's righteous because of his attachment to Avram. So much more profound. The lack of original activity in and of itself tells us the greatness of Yitzchak. Because the greatness of Yitzchak was not contained in his ability to trailblaze. The greatness of Yitzchak was in his staying power, in his gevura. Again, I know I've said this 10 times, but I think it's so important. In his ability to remain committed to the vision, despite suffering multiple setbacks, disappointments, and failures. Yes? Right.
And he speaks to his mother's house. He says, okay, enough love, I'm back to Eretz Canaan. And you see direct intervention from Hashem to the other two levels. There's really no line of communication.
Right. It's true. The closest thing we have with Yitzchak is at the end of Parshas Chayei Sarah, the Torah says that after Avraham Avinu died, Vayivarech Elokim es Yitzchak b'no, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu blessed him. But that's not conversation. But the truth is, I didn't think about that. It's an excellent point. It actually fits in well for a simple reason. God doesn't need to communicate with Yitzchak. It's interestingly enough, you know, Avraham and Yaakov need a lot more direction. Yitzchak is crystal clear on what his life mission is. He understands exactly what it is that there's no ambiguity in Yitzchak's life. He understands, I need staying power, I need to see it through, I need to remain committed to the vision. That's my life's work. Yes? Right, true. But this is more than just Gamzu Latova. This is an unshakable commitment to a vision, which, by the way, just as an aside, he may have inherited from his mother Sarah, who had that. Yes. That I'm sorry, who? Right. Right, but remember, the problem is we go back to the Kli Yakar, who says we don't really know what happened at the Akedah with Yitzchak, because Yitzchak's not the topic of the Akedah. But he's there. But remember, we have a controversy there also. Was he there willingly? Right? Was he there? But you're right. According to most commentaries, you're right. The willingness. Correct. The willingness to go. Yitzchak's first demonstration of Gevura was his willingness to follow his father and be offered up like a sacrifice, even though, remember, Yitzchak has no direct, like Avram was saying, no direct conversation from God. That is true. How do we associate peace? Why do we associate peace with Yitzchak? Right? I mean, a life tranquility. He felt content with his life. For himself. Yeah, no. Just for himself. Yes? Can you speak a little bit louder? Yes? Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'm sure there are other Mefarshim who do it. He's the only one I saw that directly addressed it. Right. Right. The truth is, the reality also is, it's very difficult to grow up in the shadow of a dynamic person, because the truth is, you're never going to be as dynamic as there's only one Avraham Avinu, so Yitzchak is never going to be that. That is true, but maybe his son Yaakov. True. Yes, Kitty.
Well, another question that was asked here in the beginning was why the second blessing? Why would he give the blessing? So it fits in with everything that you're saying, because Yaakov is now going on a journey, leaving Eretz Yisrael.
Look at it perhaps and say, well, my father can do a whole lot in his life. So he's reinforcing what the covenant is. You know, this is what beautiful. The perpetuation. Yet saying that it could be that the concept of the second blessing, which we started off with today, is also an idea that perhaps Yaakov Avinu, looking at his father, not necessarily realizing what his father went ahead and accomplished in his lifetime. But the truth is, by giving the blessing, what Yitzchak essentially is doing is transmitting the Mesorah to his son, which was the essence of his very life's work. Meaning the act of giving the bracha in and of itself embodies Yitzchak's Gevura staying power. He maintained the Mesorah long enough to be able to pass it on to the next generation. That's an excellent point. All right, we'll stop over here. Good night.